The dash eight twenty-fours, do not have a cap on the maximum amount of credit per taxpayer or per program. Retains the current period for claiming the credit at, maximum period of 10 years. It includes the 3-year carry forward period, which is in current law. It adds the additional 3-year carry forward period under certain circumstances. That is the provision that is already in Senate Bill 764A. It, creates an interim task force to review the, history and effectiveness and efficiency of the current, tax credit program. And it also includes the, provision from the dash A19s that we saw last time, which, provide that a taxpayer convicted of a environmental, transgression, felony nature would be disqualified from using pollution control tax credit for 5 years, including loss of, carry forward they would be entitled to during that period. That's the dash A24s. The dash A25s, amend the A and Gross bill. The dash A25s provide that a facility, not be certified if it is required in order to comply with an enforcement order or a judicial judgment other than a consent decree. The dash A26s are basically the same as the dash A25s, except that the dash A26s include consent decrees as a reason for disallowing certification of a pollution control facility. There's some subtle differences between those two. I'm sure we have somebody here who can explain what those are if need be.
We'll give them the opportunity to do that. Is that your overview?
That is it.
Thank you. What did you say? Let me ask if there are questions on the, from the committee about the dash 24, I mean the A24 amendments. As I do, though, let me preface that with an expression of thanks and appreciation to both Olivia Clark from the governor's office and also the Representative Fufori when she was available to us. And
before I went into hiding.
And industry folks who have spent a lot of time in the last 8 days coming to terms on, it looks like all but perhaps one of the smaller issues on the A24 amendments. So in that respect, I think the A24s represent a consensus except for the changes that are proposed in the 25s and 26s, and we will take some specific testimony on those. Before we do, though, are there questions of the committee about the 24s? Representative Bates?
I just want to be sure I understood the financial impact of this as it spreads out to 205, 07. We have two sets of numbers and possibly could walk through those. The 201, 203 is a negative $0.83 million.
Representative Bates, members of the committee, yes. The revenue impact in 01, 03 of the dash A24s I've estimated as about $830,000 in 01, 03 and rolling up to about almost $5 million in 0305.
And $7 million in 5-7.
That's correct, $7.7 million in 0507.
And that's expected to continue then indefinitely as at the higher tier?
Representative, your question is whether the $7.7 million continues indefinitely
mm-hmm. at a higher tier?
The revenue impact beyond that period would be approximately in that range, although it's measured against the current law, which ends with
sunset
the credit now. So after so if the credit sunsets at the end of this year, in about 10 years from now, you will recover the full amount of current law credit on an annual basis. Currently, it's running about $15 or $16 million per year of credit claims.
Yeah, I think that's why this revenue impact, the increase that we see here between 01, 03, 03, 05, and 03, and 05, 07 would not be linear and probably not even flat because those years reflect credit being taken that would have been taken under the current law. spread forward to those years.
We're trying to defeat it.
No, I think, and also, since we don't have any experience to know how much the 35%, the upper tier would be utilized, it's going to be pretty conjectural, I think, to say beyond that point what the revenue impact would likely be. Any other questions about the 24s? Representative Carlson?
Could you just go through, again, the pluses and minuses? What is the column that doesn't have a heading on it? What does that represent?
Oh, Representative Carlson, members of the committee. Those represent the difference with respect to the revenue impact of Senate Bill 764A in gross version. So, for example, the Dash A24s, the revenue impact of the Dash A24s is $800,000 less negative than the 764A. So, for example, the 764A impact in 0103 is estimated at minus 1.6 million. The Dash A24s, the estimate is 830,000. The difference is about 800,000.
And it's reflected as a plus because that means the state revenue, the general fund, is to the good. That's right, by that amount.
That's correct.
Okay.
Very close.
Okay, and you're being distributed summary of elements of Senate Bill 764 with negotiated amendments. This reflects the Dash 24s. These come out from John Ledger. I think it pretty well tracks with what Ed was giving us, along with a very nice graphic of the tiered rates and how those roll into with the timeline on that. Let's go ahead, and while you're looking at those, we'll not foreclose any further questions about the 24s, but while you're kind of digesting that, let's invite Olivia Clark. And did you want to bring Dexter? And let's have one person from the industry side come on up for this discussion. Come on up. Let's just have a table talk. Olivia, do you want to introduce the 25s and 26s?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Olivia Clark from the Governor's Office. And first of all, I just want to thank the Chairman for his able facilitation of the negotiations and Representative Kefouri, who was with us, Representative Close, and Representative Williams, who made a star appearance at one point. You really. I thought the negotiations went very well and feel good about what we've been able to do. However, there's one lingering issue, one lingering concern that is represented in both the 25s and 26s that we were not able to resolve in the final meeting. And that is, and let me just speak as a layperson, I'm not an attorney, and what the concern is we're trying to get out here. The amendment itself may not be get at it, but Dexter can speak to that. And we're at a disadvantage today because a representative from DEQ's enforcement section is not here. But what we're trying to get at in the Dash A25s is to make sure that the tax credit cannot be used by a company or at a facility where they have been actually forced or compelled by law, by maybe the judicial system or some other means, to install the pollution control device, that they did not come there willingly, that they did not take advantage of the incentive that was available to them through the pollution control tax credit, and instead had to be compelled to do that. And that's the simple concept that's here before you. I'm not sure that the words that are on the page here actually do that or do that in the most graceful manner. And I'll leave that up to Dexter and others to try to explain and for you to decide today whether we should go in that direction.
Okay, just for clarification, this is an alternative to, is it the same Section 11 in the, is it Section 11 in the Dash?
No, this is in addition to.
Oh, it's in addition
24s.
To. Okay. And but, we have in the 24s right now the felony.
The felony.
Disqualified.
Right, that was the Dash A19, I think, that Representative Hass.
Yeah, and that's been incorporated in Dash 24s.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is in addition
to
oh, I guess that'd be right, because this doesn't.
And I think that excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
No, that's okay.
The dash 825s are actually a little narrower, would potentially impact fewer companies in that we've taken out the consent decree piece that I think is included in the A26 version.
Dexter, do you want to talk about the language of these two?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. Basically, what the 25s attempt to do is to prohibit certification of those facilities for which either an administrative agency or a court has ordered that they be constructed or installed in order to comply with an existing requirement. By contrast, the A26s also would restrict certification of facilities that are constructed or installed pursuant to a settlement agreement arrived at between the industry and the regulating agency that pursuant to the agreement is found to be required by state or federal law.
So if you enter into a consent agreement under the 26s, for instance, you would still be you would be disqualified if you enter into a consent agreement, or at least a consent decree, as that specific term is used, under the 25s, you would not be disqualified.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I should point out on the 25s, actually all kinds of settlement agreements are excluded. So if you entered into some kind of a settlement and the settlement called for constructing or installing a facility, that would qualify for certification, not just consent decrees. Okay. Consent decrees are actually kind of, I'm told, I'm not an expert on this, but I'm told they're kind of federal court order, and that's why they're specifically excluded.
Okay. John Ledger, let's get your take on these.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm John Ledger with Associated Oregon Industries. Just a couple of comments on these two items. First of all, I just wanted to echo Olivia's thanks to the members of this committee that worked so hard on this, and I think it took a lot of work to come up with the agreement you have before you now. A couple of things, and I have some experience in this because some of you know I ran an air program in another state for some years, including the enforcement side of it, so I have some familiarity how this works. The DEQ has an extensive enforcement program in place now. They have a penalty matrix whereby they look at the violations you would commit. They go into one of various bins, and then it's sized depending on the severity of it, and then they issue you a penalty. And it's graded, like most penalties are, depending on the severity of the violation. They collect about $500,000 a year of penalties. So they already have that in existence, and the worst violation you commit, the larger the penalty, and it can scale up to essentially unlimited amounts, up to, in some cases, $25,000 a day. So that's on the civil side and the administrative side there. Also, what a lot of people don't know is you can be fined, and you frequently are fined, by both the state and the federal government for the same violation. In air, if you violate the state-approved air rules, you can also be overfiled and fined by the federal government for violating air rules. So you have both federal and state liability there. And again, it's scaled, although the federal fines are much higher, but generally speaking, the severity of the violations reflected in the severity of the penalty. In our in the document you have before you, the negotiated bill, we did put in, I think with everyone's agreement, Representative Hass's piece, which is if you willfully commit a violation, willfully and knowingly, this violation of the Environmental Crimes Act, and DEQ does pursue things under the Environmental Crimes Act, and you're convicted, you can't get these credits for 5 years. In fact, as we expanded it a little bit, so you can't even carry forward the credits that you wouldn't get, that you don't get. You can't carry them forward, so you're out of credits for 5 years. And that is for a willing and knowing violation, and we think that's appropriate. A couple of other things. If something like this is put in place, what you're essentially doing is decoupling the amount of the penalty from the violation. In many cases, violations are minor. They might be large, but it bears no relationship to the size of the tax credit you might have. So in some cases, there'd be no impact at all if a company doesn't have a tax credit. And in some cases, it could be huge, even for a relatively minor violation. It's a little bit like saying you get a traffic ticket, you can't deduct your home income mortgage interest. Well, some people have it, some don't. Some people have a lot, some don't. It's completely discoupled, decoupled. So there's no relationship between the penalty and the fine. The other thing it does is it greatly raises the stakes. Right now, there are very few cases where companies refuse entry to DEQ administrators, inspectors, or refuse to send in documents. They get a lot of requests for documents, and things are handled pretty congenially. What this does is this terrifically raises the stakes, into the millions of dollars for those enforcement cases. So it's going to make it much more difficult for the agency and companies, I think, to cooperate. Lastly, and I think this, I don't know if this was aimed at a specific company or not, but let me tell you what a lot of these things revolve around. And they would be like this. A company puts in a, gets a permit, puts in a boiler, gets another permit, puts in a boiler, gets a third permit, puts in a boiler. EPA comes along and says, those were all done within the last 10 years. We consider that one source. We consider that a major source, technically, not a bunch of little sources. You get a big fine. Or you get an order placed over you. You haven't violated any emissions. But that is the case, I know in one case at least, which was the result of the order, which resulted in the order. So in many cases, these in fact are not emission violations. But what it does, it is slaps a huge fiscal burden, huge, on a company for something that it may bear no relationship to. The last thing is, in either of these cases, for instance, language that says here, like to comply with an enforcement order issued by a state or federal agency, I think that would include the CAFOs. Or EPA just came in recently and issued a bunch of federal orders against CAFOs. These are farmers. These are ranchers. I think what it would mean is they couldn't get a tax credit. And these are probably the people that need it most. That's why the non-point source is in part is in the higher tier. So in summary, what I'd like to conclude with is this. We're dealing often with so much money on these tax credits, and the type of violation we're dealing with is so variable. But I think it's not scaled, it doesn't couple, and I don't think it makes a lot of sense.
Okay, thank you for the overview of those amendments. Questions, Representative Witt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, your concern about the dash 25 and 26, and what I heard you saying is that the penalty that you could pay potentially under this program could be far, far, far in excess of reasonableness compared to the enforcement proceeding that you are required to, where you signed up to agree to, or a consent decree or an agreement you entered with, for example, EPA, to comply with some regulation. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, that's partially correct, or it could just be a unilateral order.
Okay. Do you have the same concern about paragraph 12 in the dash 824s? Is it just in the dash 25s and 26s? That's on page 4.
Oh.
There it speaks of a felony, convicted of a felony.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, I think that's a completely different animal. That is where somebody willfully, knowingly went out and committed a crime.
So your objection on this point is not to the 824s paragraph 12, but it's to the 825s and 826s.
Mr. Chairman, it is, Representative Witt, it is, and one of those reasons is that, for instance, in the 24s and 25s, that could just be a unilateral order.
25s and 26s.
Yeah.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. John, were you part of the work group that's been discussing
this? Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, I was.
Were the 825s, 826s discussed in that work group?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt, they were.
They were discussed.
The topic was discussed, yes.
But not this specific language?
I don't know if the specific language came up, but certainly the topic was addressed, and I felt that what we have in the amendments was the compromise.
For the discussion, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, my question is the comment that you made in your testimony about agencies' businesses being unwilling to forward documents. Can you elaborate a little bit on why that would be? What is it in this language, and what types of documents you're talking about?
Representative Shetterly, Representative Carlson, Oregon's a little bit unique. Let me give a real quick preamble here. Oregon is a little bit unique in that we have very little litigation in the state. And the relationship between companies and the DEQ, while it might appear rocky on the surface, is much better than I've seen in other states. And one of the reasons for this is that the companies perceive the DEQ as being reasonable and being able to work things out, you know, getting to a reasonable result. They don't like being penalized, but they feel like it's rational. And what this does is this injects a strong element of irrationality into the whole process. So when an inspector comes or there's a document or a request for documents, you know, instead of, I think what it does, it kind of breaks down the layer of confidence and trust and raises the risk very high. And I think that's just bound to have a chilling effect on the process.
Okay. The discussion, Representative Bates.
I thought I was pretty clear what you were saying. Then you said this was a compromise, and I kind of got me confused, yeah. Mr. Chair. So I'm going to try to flesh this out a bit better for myself. Maybe you can help me. You said that, I think you said the A25s and A26s were compromises that were reached in that committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, no.
Okay, I misunderstood that.
Correct.
And these concepts were discussed in committee, though?
Representative Shetterly, Representative Bates, they were.
And in that discussion, you presented the case, the potential case of somebody who was receiving large tax credits, has a minor problem, and loses the entire tax credit for that year because of that minor problem.
Representative Shetterly, Representative Bates, that's true.
Was there a counter-argument to that discussion?
Representative Shetterly, Representative Bates, I don't recall the details of the discussion. It was discussed.
As you present it, it seems pretty straightforward that would not be, this shouldn't be something we should require, but I always think it might be another side of the coin.
Representative Shetterly, Representative Bates, there could easily be another side of a coin in politics, I think. But our concern was if somebody has a legitimate gripe, maybe they want to take something minor to court. And maybe they feel like this is a thing that they feel they're right on. And instead of just risking the amount of money going to court and a penalty, they're risking 5 years of tax credits.
I think we need to continue this. Are we in the call?
We are.
Okay, hang on, everybody. We will be back.
Whoa!
Five degrees. Okay, we will stand in recess until we.